Harry Flashman, coward, womanizer, opportunist, and accidental hero, finds himself thrust into one of history's most remarkable military campaigns. The year is 1868, and Britain has committed to an extraordinary mission, invading Abyssinia, modern Ethiopia, to rescue a handful of European hostages held by Emperor Theodore, a once progressive ruler now descended into madness and cruelty. Through Flashman's cynical yet observant eyes, we witness this forgotten chapter of imperial history, a campaign that cost £9 million, billions in today's money, yet resulted in astonishingly few casualties. What drives this reluctant anti-hero isn't courage or patriotism, but self-preservation and an uncanny knack for finding himself entangled in history's pivotal moments. His candid account strips away Victorian pretensions to reveal the messy realities behind imperial glory, offering insights both hilarious and profound about human nature when faced with danger, duty, and desire. I've spent my life running from danger, only to find myself charging headlong into it, Flashman confesses about his involvement in the Abyssinian expedition. After escorting Emperor Maximilian's remains to Austria, his affair with Admiral's relative Gertrude risks exposure. Fleeing this predicament, he encounters old schoolmate Speedicut, who offers an escape. Transport valuable Maria Theresa silver dollars to Africa for General Napier's expedition. When fleeing one disaster, any port in a storm will do, he explains his acceptance. Traveling to Alexandria, Flashman reveals his peculiar code. I may be a scoundrel in most respects, but I've never been fool enough to tamper with strong boxes in my charge. A life spent in perpetual flight holds no appeal. This calculated self-preservation, rather than morality, guides his choices. As he journeys through Egypt toward the Red Sea, his narrative blends historical detail with sardonic commentary, setting the stage for his unwilling role in one of history's most remarkable military campaigns. The land Flashman reluctantly enters is a mountainous realm where ancient Christianity blends with tribal traditions. These Abyssinians are like no other Africans, he notes. Semitic folk from Arabia, handsome, cruel, and bloodthirsty, yet more civilized than most on the continent. Their Christianity, embraced in the 4th century, before most European conversions, appears in rock-hewn churches and Byzantine art. Yet Flashman cynically observes this faith doesn't extend to morality. They lie freely, drink excessively, slaughter each other for sport, while their women couple like stoats. The geography spans from fever-ridden lowlands to cool highland plateaus where lions roam, from great salt plains to verdant coffee forests, varied landscapes that shape distinct tribal customs. Flashman describes Abyssinian women with mixed lust and admiration. Splendid creatures, straight noses, chiseled lips, almond eyes, saucy shapes, and often skins no darker than an Italian's. The social hierarchy ranges from noble ladies commanding household troops to serving girls with ceremonial whips. The Abyssinian crisis centered on Emperor Theodore, whose tragic transformation from reformer to monster prompted the British expedition. Beginning as Lycosa, an ambitious mercenary who married into power, he proclaimed himself emperor and king of kings, believing he was the prophesied messiah destined for global rule. Initially, Theodore impressed Europeans with his literacy and progressive reforms, including attempts to abolish slavery and improve commoners' lives. Yet these impulses existed alongside terrifying rages and brutal violence. His queen Tuwabich, British consul Plowden, and chamberlain Bell provided crucial restraint. When all three died in quick succession, Theodore's control vanished. He massacred rebels and descended into drink and escalating atrocities. The diplomatic crisis began when Theodore wrote to Queen Victoria proposing an envoy to London after receiving her gift of pistols. The Foreign Office never presented his letter to the Queen or acknowledged it. The letter that might have prevented these horrors, Flashman notes, lay unanswered in Whitehall. After a year of silence, the enraged Theodore imprisoned and tortured Europeans, triggering the rescue mission. General Napier's expedition faced seemingly insurmountable challenges. Flashman describes the landing site at Zula as a quartermaster's nightmare, mountains of supplies in disarray amid thousands of dead cavalry mounts and mules. Officers were deeply pessimistic. Bombay politicians undermined Napier, transport systems neared mutiny, intelligence about Theodore was contradictory, and the scorching heat, 116 degrees on a cool day, threatened epidemic. The statistics were daunting. 12,000 men marching 400 miles through boulder-strewn terrain at 10 miles daily. Mules needed 40 days forage, while elephants had to haul mountain guns over passes that would have Hannibal crying for his pension. When Flashman questioned Speedy, Napier's advisor, the assessment was grim. Napier lacked proper transport, commissariat, communication lines, and reliable intelligence. His strategy? Raid and run with a small force to find the prisoners before retreating. The odds? 6-4 against. Favorable only because Napier's the best since old Colin Campbell. This massive force represented the Empire's full might, mobilized for just a handful of captives. Flashman's hopes of simply delivering silver and returning home vanish when Napier reveals his true purpose, a secret mission critical to the expedition. Theodore marches toward Magdala with his dwindling army, having committed atrocities across southern provinces. While most of Abyssinia opposes him, three powerful tribal leaders, each commanding 30,000 warriors, wait cautiously, hoping the British will depose Theodore before they compete for his throne. Napier fears Theodore might make his stand at Magdala, escape with captives, or execute them. To prevent this, he needs tribal allies, specifically the Galas, whom Speedy describes as the Apaches of Abyssinia, ferocious Mohammedan raiders who live for murder and plunder. Napier wants Flashman to serve as ambassador to these bloodthirsty slave traders, specifically approaching Queen Mastit of the Walogalas, a formidable widow, fair, fat, and 40, with a fine, bright eye and a glutton's appetite. Trapped by his unearned heroic reputation, Flashman must accept this perilous mission, traveling as Khasim Tamwar while secretly offering the queen $50,000 to surround Magdala with Gala warriors, cutting off Theodore's escape. The Abyssinian campaign concludes with remarkable efficiency, just 17 wounded at Magdala, only 2 dead at Oroji, and 1 accidental shooting during the march. This minimal casualty count, rare for colonial campaigns, showcases Napier's tactical brilliance. After Theodore's burial with military honors, Flashman avoids the bedlam of drunken looters ransacking Magdala. The area teems with 30,000 Abyssinians, including Theodore's queens and nearly 300 political prisoners, some chained for decades. Napier awards Magdala to Queen Masti with one condition. Its defenses must be destroyed. That afternoon, the fortress is set ablaze, creating a huge lake of fire atop the mountain, symbolically ending Theodore's reign. The army withdraws northward the next day. Napier watches his troops depart, appearing weary but satisfied amid his men's cheers. Looking back at the smoking ruins, he simply states, "Going home now, gentlemen." This expedition stands unique, an army sent for a just cause without political vanity. Yet Flashman concludes practically, next time they get a letter from a touchy barbarian despot, it might save them trouble and expense if they sent him a civil reply by return of post.